What up, Long Beach? This week on the show, we're going back to school like Rodney Dangerfield because these teachers, they get no respect in the digital classroom. As always, What Up, Long Beach is hosted by the 562.org, which is myself, JJ Fiddler. On my port side, he's Mike Arbacio, and hard to starboard, he's Tyler Hendrickson.
I'm starboard to you on my Zoom box, so I think the ship is in disarray, which is exactly what this week feels like, yes?
The reason why it's port and starboard is because it's the same for everybody, no matter how you're looking at it.
But let's be honest, everyone would agree that the pink starboard is the most delicious of the starboards. So
I like the mystery ones too.
Oh.
The mystery ones are indeed making history with how delicious they are. Our thanks so much to everyone at the Long Beach Post for sponsoring everything we do at the 562.org, including another episode of What Up Long Beach. We will be joined a little bit later on by two special guests. One of them, a very talented teacher and a member of the Long Beach community, Charlene Higa. I'm a fan of her, big, longtime fan of hers.
Famously so.
Personally. And we'll also be joined by volleyball superstar Adania Faumuina, about to be a junior at Long Beach Poly High School. I guess she'll be a junior whether they play volleyball this year or not. Also plays for the Mizuno Club. Adania announced her commitment to USC on the 562.org, another good example of the kind of services we're providing to the community. And I'm looking forward to talking to her about what went into that decision and getting to chop it up about what it's like for a student in the first week of the virtual school world.
And in order to support all the things that we do and provide here at the 562, best way to do that is to subscribe. Obviously, subscribe to What Up Long Beach, wherever you get your podcasts and listening to us, smash that subscribe button. Also go to the 562.org, hit subscribe on the website. It's right there in black and gold, and that will take you to our Patreon page. We really need the community support in order to keep bringing you this great Long Beach content. We are a nonprofit. Any donations or subscriptions, money that goes to the 562 is tax deductible for you and your family.
We got to get into the good news segment quickly here because we do have two guests coming on. So my good news for the week is that the Long Beach State dormitories are open. Some student athletes, mainly basketball players, are back in the dorms. They're in their little pods or mini bubbles, just interacting with their cohorts, not really getting outside of the dorms, trying to set up an area where they can start testing when they do test, hopefully get back on there. Obviously, Long Beach State basketball, the only thing left on the Long Beach State sports calendar right now. That's November 10th. But we talked to Long Beach State Athletic Director Andy Fee this week, and he says that he doesn't think November 10th is possible. He was very candid talking about how the NCAA might be building a bit of a house of cards right now. So make sure you check out our other podcast, the LB Fee Show, available right now at the 562.org, and listen to that interview with Andy, where you're going to learn a lot about what's going on in the NCAA and LBSU right now. Mike, what do you got for your good news of the week?
Well, first of all, I think we need to come up with a new name for the mini bubble, like maybe the spit bubble.
Oh.
Or like the bubble gum bubble. Like we need to really give it some like tiny bubble flavor. You know what I mean?
Well, dolphins are in pods. So what are sharks in?
Murders?
Bah, 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 bah.
Shark joke. I get it. My good news is that as JJ just mentioned, you know, school is back in session, and I spent quite a bit of my summer reporting on all of the anger and acrimony and anxiety and other A words that are less podcast appropriate, sort of flying around in the education world in Long Beach. A lot of really upset adults about basically everything you could name, from where teachers were going to be to how much screen time kids were going to have. And what was really great for me was I spent yesterday on the first day of school helping our son, you know, do his second grade login and all that, which I think we'll talk about later on. But I also spent it putting together a photo gallery for the Long Beach Post, which you can see at lbpost.com, of what it looked like. You know, we just said, and we put it up on our social channels too, like, what did school look like? Like, you're not at school, you're not in a classroom. What did your workspace look like? What did your quote unquote class look like? And what was it really genuinely inspiring to me was over 600 parents and teachers left pictures in that comment thread. And for as much anger and anxiety as there was around what school was going to look like, the kids were just excited it was the first day of school. You know, you had kids who were in their pajamas. You had kids who were dressed really nicely. You had kids who were sharing a table with three of their siblings. You had kids who looked like they were in a room that was bigger than their classroom all by themselves. But regardless of what neighborhood you're in or what your financial circumstances or whatever else are, it was cool to see that really unifying part of Long Beach, that everyone's going back to school on the same day. It was just great to see all those smiling faces, and kind of pulled me out of a little bit of an emotional funk that I've been just being anxious about our own family situation, about work and school and everything. So that was great.
Check out that gallery at Long Beach Post. Tyler, what's your good news for the week?
I think kind of building with that, where I had kind of an experience that was a bit uplifting, you know, because I think what Mike's talking about, where we all have this shared struggle and inconvenience that none of us want to be a part of and everyone's sick of at this point. We can all agree on that. But I think, you know, finding ways to kind of come together and do something unique and just sort of realize, hey, this sucks for everyone, but we're all trying and doing our best. And, you know, that shared struggle, I think, is, you know, there's beauty in that. You know, for me, it was over the weekend. I woke up earlier than I usually do on a Saturday morning, and, you know, headed down to a community event by a local nonprofit. It's iOwnIt.today. You know, run locally. It's been around for about 6 years, and they did a backpack and groceries giveaway to families in need in preparation for school starting. And so it was just nice to get down there and see, you know, families that were there. And obviously, you know, just like so many families around the world right now, just kind of need a helping hand during such a difficult time with COVID and the, you know, the economic downturn and all that goes with that. So just seeing people get that helping hand and kids excited to get their backpack and the color they wanted, you know, and getting ready to get back to school and maybe see their friends, even though it's through a computer screen, you know, that was an uplifting moment for me and a reminder that a lot of positive can happen when community comes together, and there's no community like Long Beach.
Before we get to our special guests, we have to shout out the sponsor of everything we do at the562.org. That's Naples Rib Company. They've been rolling with us tough for more than a decade, and so we're sticking with them during the tough times too. Get down to Naples Rib Company. They have the patio open right next door for some outdoor dining if you're doing the outdoor dining thing. If you're still eating at home like my family is, you can do the takeout, pick up whatever your delicious Naples Rib Company order is, get yourself some ribs, get yourself some brisket, some chicken, some sausages, whatever you want, and take that to go or eat it there. But definitely get down to Naples Rib Company and tell them the 562.org sent you.
Okay, guys, we have a special guest joining us, but we're going to flip the interviewee. It's kind of like that scene in Step Brothers where he's like, now we're going to interview you. So we've got Charlene Higa, teacher from Jordan High School, and we've got Mike Gardabasio. You should know them already. I mean, Char, you're the original GFOP, right? You were one of our only listeners when we were recording this show in your living room back in like 2008. And now, you know, you don't even have to listen to the pod anymore. So it's like we've come a really long way. So obviously we're talking about the first day of school. A first day of school unlike any other. We're putting it in quotes because everything is different. And you guys have such a unique take and such a unique view on everything. Char, you're obviously a teacher, but you're a parent. Mike, you're a parent and also somebody who has a full-time job. So you guys are working at it from all angles. So I want to just know, what was the setup like for the first day of school? Are you guys cornering yourselves off in different parts of the house with different computers?
It actually came in waves. We had a plan set up, I want to say over the summer, like maybe a month or two ago, we had a plan set up like, okay, so it'll be good. Mike will be with Vincent in the office. And so Vincent has his little corner of the desk. Mike's got his corner of the desk, and I've got my desk in there. It'll be good. And then it was literally Monday. So the day before school started, Monday morning, I just happened to mention that obviously if Vincent is on a Zoom call with his class, I can't also be on a Zoom call with my class in the same room. And for some reason, that was the first time it had occurred to us. So all of the planning and everything went out the window, and we were running around on Monday, the day before school started, trying to come up with another solution. So right now, Mike's in the office. Vincent's got his little workstation next to him at the desk. And I am in the next room with a card table, my laptop. I'm actually... just in this weird inner bedroom part of our house that doesn't actually make any sense. And that's what we're doing right now. That's what we're working with, because the internet is not reliable in the front part of the house. So we all have to be in the back part of the house, but we can't be in the same room. And we're juggling it.
If you stick around and listen to the rest of the podcast, you will see that when we interview Adania, who's coming up in just a couple minutes on the show, I moved to our living room, Jage, which you know, because you could probably see the wood overhead or whatever.
Oh yeah, you were coming to us live from the Elks Lodge,
from the cabin, baby. because Vincent was on his class in the office. Char was teaching her class in her room, and then I needed to talk loudly to record the podcast, so I moved to the living room.
We are in a lucky position because we have enough space in our house for the people who are doing things, and that makes us very lucky. It is just a weird setup, and I think everyone's setup, for the most part, is a little bit weird. The fact that my room that I'm in is a walk-through room that I can't actually close the doors to. So when Vincent was out on his 10-minute recess, that meant that he sprinted through the room with his, you know, 7-year-old shoes clunking on the hardwood floor.
His size 19 shoes.
Yeah, and then when Mike had his lunch break and decided it was time to make his smoothie in the kitchen, that was also an enjoyable situation. So yeah, we're still working out some kinks, but I mean, it's sustainable, I think, and I guess I should ask Mike how sustainable it is, but it's sustainable for now at least. And like I said, I feel really lucky that we even have options, because I know a lot of people, it's literally like, well, we've got one room, so we'll figure it out.
It's definitely a lot of different people dealing with a lot of different things, but everybody's going to be on the computer. That's a lot of screen time. How much screen time do you think your family logged on the first day?
Well, Vincent's class, he has a late start at school, so he's in class because they're doing minimum days this week and next week. He's basically logged on watching video with his teacher, live from his teacher, from 9 a.m. until 2 p.m. with a 40-minute lunch and a 10-minute recess. I personally, you know, there was a lot of parents who were like, oh, it's too much screen time. I think Char and I are really attentive parents. I think we've got bright kids, but it's during the summer, our kids watch 5 hours of TV or video games a day. That's not like that would not be an unprecedented day. So for that to actually be live interaction with his teacher, who's trained to, you know, handle that and with the other students, I'm not saying it's not a concern for some people, you know, but I personally, it's like, come on, man. Like, you know, the kid watched a movie and played video games. It's basically like that, except now it's class, right? So it was a lot. And I think he's in second grade. He was definitely wiggly, you know what I mean? By the time we got to lunch at the end of the day, I did see in that photo gallery when I was putting that together that we mentioned a little earlier in the show, a couple parents got big exercise balls to put under the desk for their kids to sit in, so they could kind of like wiggle back and forth and like rock around without like their head moving a lot, you know? So I did, you know, a couple of times I had to just sort of give him the like calm body reminder because he's drumming on the metal on his chair or whatever else. But for the most part, you know, that's how kids feel in second grade, whether they're in a classroom or or in front of a screen, right? So I didn't feel it was excessive, but it was definitely... it's definitely new, right? In the spring, he had like, what was it, Char? Like two-hour meetings or something with his teacher. And now it's, you know, twice that, basically going to be 5 days a week. So it's an adjustment, but he handled it, man. You know, Vinny, he's a champ. He's doing good so far.
You know, our parents used to tell us if we sat too close to the TV, we'd go blind. I guess that's not a thing anymore.
I mean, I'm blind anyway. I don't know. You could pick your cause, you know? Too much rap music. I don't know.
Jage, I've been surprised over the last 2 days how much I miss passing periods, because really, because the students are just clicking from one Zoom link to another, they're not spending any time getting from one place to another. So from their end, that means that they're not really getting up and moving around. They're not having that interaction, that fresh air, that talking to each other. Especially I'm out in the bungalows when I'm on campus, so everyone needs to go outside of the building to get to me. So there's that, but there's also, for me, I don't get the break where one class leaves and the next class comes in. and I can be setting things up, or I can be helping one student from a previous class while other kids come in. So because we're still on the normal bell schedule, I still have only 7 minutes between classes. So if there's a kid who stays after class needing help submitting something, by the time I'm done with that, I need to open up the Zoom class for the next group. And we're supposed to be opening up the Zoom, you know, a couple minutes before. So I was texting with a friend. I'm literally, where I'm right now is probably 2 yards away from the bathroom. And I had to pee like the entire time because I just had no time to go over there. Because by the time I was finished with one class, I was like, oh, my other class, I'd log onto the Zoom and there are already 6 kids waiting because they don't have to go anywhere. All they have to do is click the next link and there's like, where's my teacher? So that's been hard. I miss being able to like stand up, walk around, use the restroom if I have to.
Or even catch your breath. I mean, you
right,
know,
exactly.
It's work getting the attention of these kids when they're in front of you. I can't imagine how difficult it is to keep their attention in this digital setting. Are you having to slap the ruler on the computer screen or give them a little robble robble to get their attention?
We've broken 2 computers already.
That's going to be the biggest challenge going forward, is just keeping kids' attention on the screen, because we all know, I mean, I have an issue too. I'm sitting here with my laptop open and I see that I get an email. I want to check and see what that email is. I'm getting, you know, something's happening on the phone. I want to see what it is. It's hard to do that anyway, but now I'm being forced to be on the computer, right? Like usually in school, in classrooms, I can say, okay, everyone put your phones down or close your laptop so that I know that I have your attention. And they can't do that. I can't have them do that. So there's, by definition, there's more distractions, and the distractions are screen distractions. And I'm saying focus on my screen, not on the other screens. And that's going to be an ongoing challenge. So that is something that we are working on, that we are just going to have to grow together as teachers and students and families too, because I know that it's hard for everybody. It's not what we're used to doing. So those new norms, as we call them.
Mike, was it difficult to keep Vinny locked in on the screen?
Yeah. I mean, the teachers are doing a really good job of not just having them stare at the screen for 5 hours straight. And so there's like, he has, I'm grabbing it so you can see it right now. Like he has a whiteboard that he uses to write answers on, and they can show the answers. The teacher tells them, bring a book for when you're doing silent reading, so you don't have to like get up and run to your bedroom, because you wouldn't do that in class, right? So be prepared at your desk. But of course, you've been on for 2 hours, recess isn't for 15 more minutes, and you're just kind of fidgety, like you're holding a whiteboard, you know, you're trying to make sure he's not drawing on that. The bigger thing actually in terms of the attention for me has just been that they can chat with each other privately. And so, you know, there's sort of like basically DMs floating around pretty rapid fire between these kids as the teacher's talking.
Are you saying that they're passing notes in class, Mike? Is that what you're saying?
Digitally speaking, yeah. And so like for Vince's class, for example, in his little group of friends, one of their friends moved out of state in March when the shutdown happened. And so they didn't know if they were, you know, they don't have Facebook or something, right? So they didn't know if they were ever going to see him again. And he pops up in the class. So obviously he and his best friends, they're all like messaging each other back and forth, like, oh, you know, our friend is back, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, in class, you know, I drop him off a half hour early so he can play basketball with whoever, you know, or whatever. Normally, if he's at school, all that stuff happens outside on the playground. And then you go in for school and you're excited or whatever. But because it's now like 9 a.m., everything's happening. All of that excitement and that energy is just sort of in the Zoom, you know? I mean, it's really, I would say it's less analogous to regular school than I expected it to be. You know what I mean?
You're really gilding the lily on the poop story, Mike. We need the poop story. Come on.
It's possible, and if you know my son, this probably doesn't surprise you. It's possible that he and his friends were messaging the word poop back and forth to each other. Which Adanya revealed to us before we started recording, I think Shar's about to reveal the same thing, that the teacher can actually see even the private messages. So we're off on the right foot.
it's really hard for me not to be like, man, I need to message that teacher and show her how to turn off private messaging. Because I don't want to snitch on my son, but it is really hard. There's so much. I mean, literally everything is brand new. Like, we had just a hellish week of professional development last week, where we were on from 8 to 4 every day, learning everything brand new. Last year in the spring, we were using Google Classroom and Google Meet, and now we're using a system called Canvas and Zoom. We've never used these before. So all of these settings for things like Zoom, we are figuring those out on the fly.
Can you give a sense of, because, you know, you and I have talked about this.
Mike, put the interviewer hat back on.
I see some of the stuff that teachers are sort of complaining about on Facebook, and I made this comment to you, like, I'd never use Zoom, but JJ and I figured it out in about 10 minutes and started recording on it. It's a lot more than just that, like, particularly with Canvas. I think Sarah Scholl, a friend of ours that I interviewed for the Post, used the analogy, like, we had to learn architecture, learn how to build the classroom with the materials, and then design the curriculum and then do it right. Like, it's a lot more than just, okay, I have to learn a different version of Google. It was really like starting from scratch.
Right. It's starting from scratch. There's also just the ever-present, like, grim reaper over your shoulder as you see the countdown to the first day of school, knowing that it's not just, like, if you and JJ are setting up a Zoom call and you don't do the settings quite right, you say to JJ, like, wait, hold on a second, let me change a setting, right? Like, you can't do that.
It would never happen, but I understand.
Right. Just imagine you were ever to make a mistake. imagine in a crazy other world.
Me personally.
I know. Just try and imagine it. Okay. But yeah, when part of being a teacher is that you want to feel like you know what's happening before you tell your students how to do it, right? And so if you're setting up a Zoom call, you have to know what all those settings are, because in, you know, 2 minutes, since we don't have passing periods anymore, in 2 minutes, they're going to be trying to get in. And if you haven't accurately, you know, changed the settings or whatever, like, it's too late, right? Like, once the Zoom call is started, it's too late. So that's also been an issue. I was telling a colleague of mine, one of the things that's been hard is the feeling that you have to have everything set the moment that the class starts, whereas usually in class there's a lot more flexibility. You can say, oh, you know what, this activity is not working the way I wanted it to, let's do this instead. Or, actually, you know what, let me change the order of these things. Or, this conversation is going differently than I wanted, I want to spend more time on this topic. But it just feels like everything has to be very set, because otherwise you just lose control of the whole thing. So that's been really exhausting. And then again, especially right now, when if something goes wrong in one of my classes, I don't have enough time to fix it before my next class, right? Where normally in school, I'll be like, you know what, I'm going to do that differently next time. I don't have time to change it. So there's all of that pressure and anxiety from the just having to go out and, like, you know, seems like you're going out and performing some delicate operation, but you still have to keep going back and, like, Googling that. What is that bone again? What's it called? You know, while you're also trying to perform the operation at the same time. And it doesn't help that there's also this, like, there's obviously the students expecting things from you. There's what you expect from yourself as a professional. And then there's all of, like, you get to see on social media all of the parents complaining about the teachers and all of these things. And it just feels like a lot of eyes are on us for us to not feel like we know what we're doing.
That's completely fair. It's treading water as opposed to swimming. You do need to tread water before you swim, but it also limits how much you can do. With that in mind, kind of expectations wise, and this is for both of you in the last question, what advice would you give to frustrated parents out there? Some of the parents had voiced their frustration online on social media, but some people who just have had trouble getting online for their kids to go to school don't have the opportunity to put an angry post on Facebook. So what would your advice to them be?
I think the number one thing from me is just that, you know, everyone needs to chill out a little bit. And just understand that, like, you know, JJ, how many days do you remember from second grade? You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, school is important. What the kids learn is important. But at least the approach that Shar and I have taken to parenting is what we're teaching the kids about how to handle challenges and frustration that they're experiencing right now is a more important lesson than they're going to get about fractions or, you know, like, and I think that's the big thing for me is, and, you know, Jage, I've written about this for us quite a bit, right? I think sports, the reason our kids play sports is not because I think they're going to get a college scholarship. It's because I think it's the easiest place to teach them about failure, right? And I think that there's a lot of people who might get out of high school and maybe they're talented or maybe they're not talented, but they don't know how to fail and be okay with it. And so something that I'm just trying to reinforce with our kids is basically just those lessons. Like, like mom and dad are going to admit to you that this is hard. And it's hard for them and it's hard for you and, you know, whatever else, but that's okay. And then, you know, we just try and ratchet the anxiety down because you could drive yourself literally crazy over this stuff. Or you could go, hey man, better this than World War II, you know, better this than a virus that's 10 times as fatal as this virus is. Like, this is really bad and it's really bad for a lot of families. But we need to try and make it as easy mental health wise on our kids as possible and hopefully teach them some lessons at the same time. But teaching your kids that when you get upset, you scream at a teacher or a principal, or you go on Facebook and fire off an angry message. You know, that's not how I want my kids to deal with any of the adversity that they face in their life. So.
Yeah, I think I co-sign on that, the need to chill.
Well, that's good.
I also, and I don't remember, JJ, whether we talked about this last time we talked, but one of the things that's been hard as a teacher is that back in March and April, we were all in this, like, we're all in this together situation. And then teachers have been on summer break. And the stuff that was happening with teachers was happening kind of outside of the public eye. And so now that we're back, a lot of people no longer are feeling like we're all in this together because they've had 5 months to figure out what their new normal is going to look like. We're starting now. This is us trying to figure it out now. And I think if what we can get out of this is an increased sense of empathy, if that's what we're teaching our students and our parents and our teachers, is to be able to think about what's happening outside of the classroom, you know, teachers thinking about what's happening outside of the classroom in our students' homes that might make it hard for them to get to class on time. Parents thinking about what's happening with the teachers and how hard it's been for us to try and get things prepared. I have always been, this is just my personality, I've always been very open with my students when I say, you know, I'm not sure if this is going to work. You know, I'm not very solid on this idea yet, so let's see how it goes. I think letting students into that process and showing them like, yeah, we don't have it all together because this is really uncomfortable, but showing them that we can be strong together and move forward through it together and grow together. We always talk about growth mindset and this ability to really model it in real time with our students, not to throw too much jargon in. I think we couldn't have built this in a laboratory, you know what I mean, to make it go better. It's like, this is what it looks like to fail forward, right? Again, little buzzword there. This is what it looks like, right? Is that we don't have it all together. We're trying our best. We're working as a team. I'm depending on you to be trying your best. You're depending on me to show up when I say I'm going to show up, and I'm going to forgive you. You're going to forgive me. We're going to get through this, right? Like, that's the lesson that we want our kids to learn. So hopefully we can keep that in mind as we like think about that empathy piece and think about like, hey, we are still in this together, even though some other people are just like, school is supposed to start and it's not school. This doesn't feel like school. And you know, I agree, but the whole world has changed. So
doing God's work. Thanks, Shar.
Thank you, Jage.
We're now joined by our special guest, Adanya Faumuina, volleyball superstar, recent USC commit, Long Beach Poly junior. Adanya, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
How's school going? How is that? We just spent some time. JJ was talking to my wife and I about the online schooling experience. She's a teacher. We've got our kids doing the school stuff here. How's it going for you? Are you liking it?
Yeah, I'm liking it, but it's like a lot of like sitting down and looking at the screen because I haven't done that in a while. Like back like in March, like when we started this, but like now it's like actual like periods And now we have to go like back-to-back classes. And the Canvas, man, just the uploading and downloading stuff, it's kind of difficult, but we'll get used to it.
Yeah, you guys are learning some new lexicon. Talking about Canvas like it's something everybody should know about.
Yeah.
Canvas, and it's just like the whole Zoom, I mean, the whole, like, none of it. We didn't have anything like that in college. So it's like the idea that this is just what every first through 12th grader in Long Beach has to know now is kind of nuts to me. What's the hardest part so far of the online school experience? Like, what are you struggling with the most?
I think it's like with the Zoom links, because the teachers are like still trying to send it to us, but like some like are on Canvas and some are like through email. So it's like hard to like navigate through that.
So we obviously announced you have decided to go to USC. My favorite part about when kids decide where they're going to go is how much love they get on the internet, you know, so through social media, but most specifically through their phone. It's always like, I'm going to this school. And then they immediately on their phone, just talking to everybody they've ever met in their entire life. What was that experience like for you?
I was like really surprised of like how much love I got. And like, I was like getting so overwhelmed. And like, I got so many phone calls from my aunties and uncles. The first phone call I got was from my auntie Tati. She played at Poly too. She called me and then she just started crying. She was like, I'm having an auntie moment right now. Like literally all my aunties, even Auntie Selena, and my uncles from like out of state, from Utah, Washington. It was just really great.
A lot of your family didn't know, right, until kind of the announcement went out. So
yeah.
Was there a lot of surprise? Did you meet any new family members that kind of showed up and said, oh, I'm related to you, by the way. You're going to USC. That's awesome. What was that like for you?
Well, my dad like knew all of them, and like they were all like sharing the stuff on that video on Facebook, and they're like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then you know how like we weren't like supposed to tell anybody for like that whole week. So I told that to my aunties and like all of the people that are like really close to me. So, and they were like, so we're just anybody now? They're like, you could have told me.
Yeah, I would say I've known some of your cousins for a while, and I would not say that all of the Yandel cousins are thrilled that I knew for a week before they did. I don't.
They were hurt. Even some of my coaches.
That being said, I do feel like it's exactly what JJ just said. Like, you keep it a secret and you make it a surprise and the reaction is so much bigger, right? Like, what was that like for you? I mean, I feel like you're honest about enjoying that, like, you know, people being excited for you and stuff like that, right? You don't have to pretend like you're too cool for that. How much fun was it to just have, like, I think you got several hundred more comments on your Instagram post than you had followers. You know what I mean? So, like, how much fun was the day of just all that love rolling in?
It was just so overwhelming, like, seeing, like, all the likes and comments. And I was like, because it was, like, actually, like, kind of like my first post. It was just crazy, man. Like, in the first 5 minutes, I got, like, 200 likes. And I was like, why am I?
So you make that announcement. Obviously, that's got to make you almost Jones to play some volleyball, right? And now we're in this situation where you don't get to do that. You should be doing that literally right now. It's a Wednesday, you know, you're in the gym right now.
Yeah. Usually.
So how are you filling that void of competition? I mean, you as an elite athlete have probably been competing almost every day of your life, as long as you can remember. So how are you filling that void where you're not being able to compete every day?
It's really hard because like that's all we work for, like as a team. And like we usually like go out to tournaments and like JOs this year. And how it got canceled and we're supposed to go to Texas. And we were like really excited. And then when like when COVID hit, it was like all of us were like crushed. So we've just been doing a lot of Zoom workouts and like just to get like back into rhythm. We're very fortunate like at the MAC at Mizuno. They've been doing like a lot of clinics and camps. So my dad's been like putting us in that. Like tonight I have jump class and clinic, I think.
You're definitely finding ways to stay busy. One thing that I wanted to ask you about, we talked a little bit, you know, for the story about your place in volleyball as a, you know, kind of a prominent young Polynesian player, and someone who is sort of hoping to go and plant a flag, you know, on the international level as a Polynesian player, right? Your high school made a big move in hiring Megan Moanoa, who I think you could say arguably is, you know, maybe the best Polynesian women's player to come out of the Moore League, obviously came out of Lakewood, not Poly. What were your thoughts on that? Mm-hmm. You know, what's your early relationship been like with her? And do you feel like you guys are sort of planting a flag a little bit, I guess, as as saying, hey, we're representing for our culture, you know, in our city at this school.
It's pretty cool because, like, we have, like, that kind of, like, Polynesian connection. And also, like, some of the girls, like, on the team. So, like, it's really nice to have somebody that's, like, familiar with the culture that we have, and she embeds it into our culture as a team. So I think that's really cool to have.
And I know we talked about for the video some of the reasons that you chose USC, but we can kind of, you know, bring those back a little bit. I know you had mentioned the academics and also the, you know, the Olympic tradition that USC has produced a lot of Olympians. So, you know, if you wouldn't mind kind of talking about the goals that you have for your career. You know, obviously you got a couple more years at Poly, which we're excited to cover and see what you guys can do there. But, you know, moving on the rest of your volleyball career, what are some of the things that you want to accomplish as a player and some of the goals that you have at USC and beyond?
Beyond, I want to be like the first like Polynesian like Olympian, like on the USA team. And I want to like represent USA and win a gold medal. And that's like one of my like big goals that I've had like forever.
That's a pretty big goal. Yeah, that's a good size goal.
Yeah,
that's
like forever. Yeah. So like, and to also travel like around the world and like play pro.
Well, hopefully you can win a gold medal in 2028 in LA. That would be super convenient for us. We would love that.
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed. Not no pressure, but you know, ideally.
Before you could go pro, you're going to go to college. And obviously a big part of college is, you know, literally going to class. So let's assume that when you get there, you're going to go to class. What are you going to study? What are you looking forward to?
Okay. So one of the big reasons why I chose USC was their business program. And one of the guys that I talked to was David Belasco. And he's like really like connected with like everyone, like from Kobe Bryant to like all these famous actors and actresses. And like, he helps young businesses, like up and coming businesses. At USC, and they help support them. So that's like what I want to do, like become like go into that like entrepreneurship side of things and to like start my own business. But I don't know what yet.
What kind of business would you start?
I don't know. I would have to come up with something, like inventing something, because my dad wants me to own my own business. But I think like investing.
You want to be in the business of having rich people's money.
No, great plan.
It's a great plan.
No, you want to be in the right business. You want to be in the right business. That is the exact right business to be in. So I have a question for you about the recruiting process. And this is something that I know is weighing heavily on you. And when we had your schoolmate, Peyton Watson, on the podcast, he committed to UCLA. He's another national level player who had offers from Virginia and everything else. And in a normal world, you and he would have been probably seeing each other at the airport in Florida and stuff, like going to, you know, to and from on these official visit trips. And what I feel like, just anecdotally through covering the two of you guys, it seems like, you know, the elite kids that might normally be thinking really strongly about leaving California, it seems like this pandemic is kind of weighing on your guys' minds a little bit. You and he both have younger siblings. And, you know, how much was that sort of a part of it? Like, all of a sudden, you can't take travel for granted. You're in a sport where you've been going to JOs out of state since you were very young. But how much did the pandemic kind of solidify your desire to stay local and be close to your family?
Well, in the beginning, I wanted to stay close to home. And that was, like, a big part of it. And, like, with this pandemic, it made me realize that I, like, really need to stay home and watch my siblings grow up and help out with my parents as much as I can, and like help like groom and train my little siblings, because Mavetti, she wants to be like way better than me, and I know she will.
So yeah, and I think that's a big part of Polynesian culture is family is so important, and you know, having that structure and that community feel and staying together. And you know, you guys all talked about it, and we could see the tightness of your family. So I mean, that was one of the main things that you were looking for in recruiting, right? Was to be able to be close with your family.
Yeah. And also so they can watch me play. Cause not all of them get to come and watch me play.
Do you guys as a family watch a lot of sports together?
We watch like my games. And my dad like breaks down everything. And my mom would tell me to do stuff too. She's like, you need to get your feet there. I'll be like, okay.
So breaking down film. I like it. No basketball. You guys don't watch any basketball or baseball?
No, it's only my dad.
So what I'm getting at is with all these sports being played without fans, you know, how do you feel about coming back and playing without fans, either in high school or in college or beyond?
Honestly, I think that it's going to be just fine because all I want to do is just play. I don't need to play in front of a crowd. They can, like, record it live or something, and that'll be, like, the best thing. But, like, all I want to do is just get back on the court and compete.
Well said.
Yeah, that's all we want to do too. I just like it's funny. I don't know if you saw. I don't know if it was on Instagram. I know you're not on Twitter, but there was like a trending thing that went around yesterday that was like, tweet a picture of yourself in January, blissfully unaware of like what was about to happen. You know, and I was looking through our 562 account, and I actually tweeted. I'm gonna see if I can bring it up. The pictures from the Century Club banquet, and I'm like laughing because it's like, oh my God, we're in a room with 700 people, which is now. Now literally illegal to do that. And I'm looking at just the picture that we took with your family. You're not allowed to have that many people at a house at the same time. So I don't know. It was like really hitting me yesterday. It was like, I think what we take for granted is it wasn't just that you could go to the movies. It was like you could go to a game and a movie and Disneyland on the same day. You know what I mean? Like we're trying to bring these things back in little pieces, but it's like I just miss being able to do whatever without thinking about it, I guess. You know what I mean? And like, yeah, volleyball is such a big part of your life. And now, when was the last time you played a match? Like were you guys were doing club stuff when the shutdown happened, right?
Oh, yeah. The last match that we had was, like, late February.
Have you ever, like, can you remember a time when you went 6 months without playing a volleyball match in your life?
No. Maybe when I was, like, one or two.
0 to 6 months. Yeah. That was when.
Because I know your little sister, Mavetti, you mentioned she's in elementary school. Like she's at the MAC with you guys working out all the time. Your baby brother, I don't think can pepper yet, but I'm sure he will be able to, you know, but probably before he can form a complete sentences. Like when did you start playing? Like how long really has it been? Let's try and figure it out.
When I actually like started playing club, I was like 6 turning 7.
So it's literally been, so you literally like don't remember not playing.
Yeah. And like the year before that, I was like so scared of like playing club because I was like so intimidated by like the older girls. And so my parents just put me in a, what is it called? Where they play on the grass?
The grass leagues?
Yeah, the grass league or whatever. And then our team name was the White Ninja.
You guys were the Chris Farleys, the Beverly Hills Ninjas?
Yeah,
that's good.
That's great. And now, as a freshman sophomore at Poly, we saw the older kids afraid of you. So now it's kind of like a nice flip.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time, Adanya. We really appreciate it. Obviously, congratulations again on choosing USC.
Thank you.
Best of luck in your training as we all try to get back to the court and do exactly what you say is film some volleyball matches and do some highlights.
Yes.
All right. Take care.
Hopefully. Thank you. You too.
Couple of really great interviews today from a few of our favorite ladies in Long Beach, Charlene Higa and Adanya Falmuina. A jam-packed episode this week, boys. Let's wrap it up and do a little speech and debate to close it out. And the one that's been on my mind, I've been enjoying these versus battles on Instagram and on Apple Music. And it's been a lot of fun seeing these different artists, you know, going out through different generations, kind of going head to head and celebrating their music and having like group listening. And so I was wanting to pose the question to you two, if you could structure any versus battle to see two music artists play songs back to back and sort of celebrate their careers and their catalogs, who would you want to see squaring off?
So you're talking like Battle of the Bands, but it wouldn't have to be just rap. It could be anybody.
It could be anything. It's been largely hip-hop, R&B, but let's open it up if you want to include some more genres in it. I believe Swizz Beatz and Timbaland have been kind of putting this thing together, and so it's a lot of artists that they've worked with, and, you know, I tend to prefer that kind of music, so it's been great for me. But, you know, we've had some great ones. We've had Rick Ross against 2 Chainz. We just had Brandy and Monica go head-to-head. We had Snoop Dogg and DMX in a battle of the dogs, which obviously was won by the Long Beach representatives pretty clearly.
Obviously.
But
Peyton Watson talked about the Snoop Dogg DMX versus when he was on too. I love that one. That was the only one I watched the whole one. The other ones, it's been like knowing that it was like a throwback, like radio station weekend or something where I'll just pop in and be like, yeah, and I'll pop back up.
Right. I'm thinking non-rap is the first thing I thought of because kind of, you ever see that show Beat Bobby Flay? You know, they're trying, it's on the Cooking Channel where they're trying to be bi-flat. I think it should be just like Beat Jack White. And so it's all comers playing guitar, just getting their faces melted by Jack White just over and over and over again. It's like, next, brings up the next one. He just rips and they leave. Next, brings up the next one.
That's sick. And Jack White could do that with like 8 different instruments or something too.
That's what I'm talking, I mean, he could out folk a folk singer. And then he could out rock a rock singer.
I was actually going to say, and I'd asked Tyler before we started recording if we could do Living or Dead. And I would actually say if I could do like all time, I actually think bringing in instrumentalists would be like the number one thing I'd do. Like I would do like a Sonny Rollins versus Coleman Hawkins or something. Like I think it, like a jazz solo off would be like
Miles Davis versus John Coltrane. What are we talking about right now?
Like, you know what I mean? Like, and obviously that you're talking about two of the greatest musicians of all time. So like, of course people would be amped for that.
Let's not forget Roy Donk, regular on the Colgate Hour.
Neil Peart and John Bonham. That's so much drum. That's like 70 piece drum sets if you put them together.
I couldn't handle a 30 minute drum solo off, but I would say if I were to go living, I would probably, to be honest with you, I just think I consider myself a fan of DMX, but I don't think that he was in the same weight class as Snoop. So I think Snoop against
shots fired
against a, well, I mean, I just like, you're talking about someone who had one of the highest peaks.
You don't got to defend it, bro.
I'm just short. So I would love to see like Snoop against a Jay-Z or, you know, even a Dr. Dre, if you throw in production, just like someone that has similarly been relevant in music over multiple decades, which I think is, I mean, I think America sort of collectively, because they had like several million viewers for that Snoop one. I think America sort of collectively realized like, oh, dang, this guy is like, he's had like one of the craziest careers out there. He's so funny and he does so much other stuff, right? Like hosting game shows or doing funny commercials like the Corona one that's out right now, that I don't necessarily think kids understand that. But it's like, dude, that was like, he was the biggest rapper in the world, like, several decades ago.
it was a virtual IMDb.
Yeah,
because you just started remembering all the things he had done in his career as he was playing.
He left like 4 top 5 singles that like didn't make it into the, you know what I mean? Like it was a genuinely like absolutely nuts. Tyler, who would you go with?
So I don't know if this is safe with social distancing or whatever, but I would love to see groups. We haven't really seen groups, so I want to see like G-Unit put together, you know, like a solid catalog, because you can have all singles from the different members. And that's, I feel good. Like your 20 songs are going to be like really locked
do
in.
Do you still have a baggy G Unit? like how could, probably. Like you wouldn't even have to go on Amazon to, or like eBay to find clothes for that. I feel like you'd be able to dress yourself.
No, I get the Tim's out, you know, I'd be.
You're going to shout groups and not go Wu-Tang, bro?
That's what I was saying. No, G Unit probably versus Wu-Tang.
Tyler's a child of G Unit.
I thought it was an inner squad scrimmage. You're talking about group versus group. Okay.
Yeah, no. I'm saying like, so G-Unit on one side and then whoever you would put against them, you know, whether it's maybe like Young Money or, you know, you could do like Wu-Tang, obviously. I don't know, Good Music, perhaps. I don't know. You'd have to find the right mix. But I think that would be fun. I would also love to see Kendrick in one of these. I feel like Kendrick would bring much energy, and then also his commentary in between the songs, like introing, I feel like you get so much insight. So Kendrick maybe against a like Childish Gambino or something, I think
that's really
that
good.
Would be like really fun, but it has to be the right niche, because right now it seems like they've had artists who are like a little past their prime, no disrespect, but aren't just like main attractions right now that are getting that boost in streaming. Even though Brandy did have a new album that just came out. So, I mean, she's promoting that.
But I think that's what made this. I think Snoop Dogg sort of agreed to it. And I've gotten the sense that it was a little bit to help DMX out. Like, generally speaking, yeah, it's people who are not still signing national endorsement deals.
Well, if that's the case, let's settle this thing once and for all and get NSYNC and Backstreet Boys on this thing. Because it's a music battle, it's a dance battle, it's a fashion battle. We can just put it to rest. Not often in the American zeitgeist do we actually get to decide which is better. Here it is, right here in front of us.
I do believe that's our cue to end the show.
Yeah, that's approaching a new demographic. And, you know, good on you if they can pull it off.
Thank you to everybody who helps put this show together and everything at the562.org and Long Beach Post. Thank you to our guests. And thank you for listening, Long Beach. Obviously, we will continue to bring you everything from our community the schools, their sports teams, and everything else at those websites. So stick with us at What Up Long Beach, and you're just going to know everything you need to know about Long Beach. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.